Roll call.
Roll call for Wednesday, February 15th. Barnard.
Here.
Bebout. Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert. Hicks,
here.
Hines,
here.
Jennings,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon, Martin,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Nutting,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Bonflatern,
here.
President Anderson,
here.
Bebout?
Here.
30 present.
Prayer by Father Cronkleton. And let us pray. Lord God of the heavenly hosts, we recognize and honor today the men and women of our armed forces, especially the members of the Wyoming Air and Army National Guard. We are grateful for their service, especially when they are in harm's way and at the times of natural disaster and distress. We also remember those who have been injured in the line of duty or have given the ultimate sacrifice of their lives in defense of us and our country. Reward them for their service. Be with us here today, O Lord, as we seek to do the work of governance. Give us a share of your knowledge, wisdom, and prudence. Guide our actions both here on the floor of the Senate and in our committees as we introduce and consider legislation. Let our deliberations, debate, and amendments be insightful so that we can craft the best legislation to govern our state. We ask these things in your name. Amen.
Members of the Senate, today we are honored to have Major General Luke Reiner joining us to lead the body in the Pledge of Allegiance. General Reiner commands more than 3,000 Wyoming National Guard personnel, many of whom are in the gallery, along with many distinguished retirees and veterans. He also oversees the state's Veterans Commission, the Oregon Trail Veterans Cemetery, Wyoming National Guard Youth Challenge Program, and Camp Guernsey, which has become a destination training site for military from Wyoming and around the nation. General, would you please lead us in the pledge?
Sir, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Major General Reiner, thank you for joining us in the Senate today and leading the Pledge of Allegiance. I also want to thank the current and former members of the military in the gallery today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your service to Wyoming and our great nation. Thank you again. Reading and correction, approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 14th, 2012, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Our doctor for the day is Dean Bartholomew, medical doctor from Saratoga. Nurse of the day, thank you, doctor. A nurse of the day is Kim Johnson, and Kim serves through Cheyenne Regional Medical Center, and thank you. Members of the body, in our search of the record in regard to historical events in Wyoming, we didn't find a lot in regard to today, so I went to something else that might be familiar. It's certainly a familiar name. This is a quote from Al Simpson. For those who have integrity, nothing else matters. For those who don't have integrity, nothing else matters. On this day in history, in 1798, and I want you to realize if there was any precedent by this, that statute of limitations has run out, and so I would discourage anything upon this event. The first serious fistfight occurred in Congress. Introduction and reading reference of bills. I'm sorry, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I'm going to recognize you, and then I'll recognize Senator Jennings.
Members of the Senate, I rise just to give you an admonition to take into consideration that as we're doing particularly introductions of bills, that you are mindful of Rule 21-3 of the Senate rules with regards to interruption of the business of the day. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jennings. Thank you, Senator Ross.
I want to make a little disclosure to the Senate. Last year we worked on the bug bill, and during the year I told you last year that I rented some warehouse space to one of those companies, and during this last year I've been doing some consulting from one of those companies. And if there is a bill that comes before us that has anything to do that, I will get up and declare a conflict. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Jennings. Are there any other... Let's then move on to the reading reference of bills. Our first Senate File 69, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 69, Eminent Domain Private Road, sponsored by Senator Case, an act relating to eminent domain.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move for the introduction of Senate File 69, Eminent Domain Private Roads. Mr. President, this is a bill dealing with private property. It applies to the situation where you have a road that perhaps is developed privately by people, perhaps in a subdivision, Mr. President. And then there are other folks that want to develop adjacent land, and with that land they would they may petition the county commissioners to condemn the road and make the road a public road. Well, what this bill says, the first thing they ought to do is try to work it out together. And if the people that have the existing road can come to terms and offer the use of the existing road to the new users in a similar manner to how they've developed and used the road themselves, whether it's member fees or whatever, that the government really should stay out of it, and we shouldn't have a private road evolve to be a taxpayer burden when, in fact, we can actually keep the situation privately and have everybody be happy and paying for the road that serves their property and is developed themselves. It's a taxpayer-friendly, property rights-friendly bill. You probably heard from folks in the lobby that are helping with this. I ask for your support.
Regard to Senate File 69, Chief Clerk will call a roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas? Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Bonfaitern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 18 ayes, 12 noes.
Senate File 69. Having failed to receive the two-thirds majority vote, Senate File 69 has failed introduction. Senate File 70, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 70, sponsored by Senator Nutting, Child Abuse Reporting Penalties and Act Relating to Children.
Senator, would you like to address the bill? Senator Nutting.
Mr. President, in accordance with Senate Rule 24-1, I move for Senate File 70, Child Abuse Reporting Penalties. This bill is introduced at the request of the Department of Family Services. It corrects probably what was an inadvertent omission in the law in the 1980s. Prior to that, the penalty for failure to report abuse of the elderly or aged and abuse of children was in the same statute. They were separated, and the penalty for failure to report child abuse was omitted. So that as with the bills as it stands, there's a penalty for false reporting, but not a penalty to fail to report. So this is really to correct that omission. It lines 3 through 7 are the identical wording as what appears in the failure to report elderly abuse. So I move for the body to forward this Senate File 70 on. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senate File 70. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Barnard. Bebout. Burns. Case. Christensen. Christensen. Coe. Cooper. Dockstader. Driscoll. Emmerich. Esquibel. Geis. Hastert. Hicks. Hines. Jennings. Johnson. Landon. Martin. Meyer. Nicholas. Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins. Peterson. Ross. Rothfuss. Schiffer. Scott. Bonfaitern. President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 70, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 53, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 53, sponsored by Senator Scott, Public Land Access and Act Relating to Public Lands.
Senator Scott, go ahead, please.
File 53, the Public Land Access Bill. Mr. President, this bill relates to a problem that we're developing in the state, particularly the eastern two-thirds of it, where the access to allow people to hunt and fish is gradually being closed off. And what's happening is that the price of ranch land has gotten so high that you can't pay the mortgage off with what you can earn from the land, and we're increasingly seeing the land going to wealthy individuals, primarily from out of state, but not entirely. And the first thing they do when they buy it is they put up a no trespassing sign, and the second thing they do is they hire a manager to enforce it. And they're locking the public out of large stretches of the land, including a lot of public land that gets landlocked and you no longer have a legal access to. And there's a very common circumstance where when land was selected, people did it in sort of a ladder formation where it joins at the corners, and they were trying to isolate desirable tracts of grazing land, which were then subsequently homesteaded. and you see these patterns all over the state. We've got it in our area bad with regard to the Muddy Mountain elk herd, which I'm told is the largest elk herd in the state outside of the Yellowstone Teton area. What happens is those elk go to a place called Deer Creek Park during hunting season, where there's a wealthy individual who will take a few trophy bulls, but otherwise doesn't allow any hunting. And it's a lot of animals, 1,000+. And they go there for hunting season. They aren't hunted by the general public because this guy won't let them in spite of the fact that the land, a good chunk of that land down there, 40% or more, is state land. If this bill passes, there'll be we can get through the corners, and you need to acquire an easement to about, the bill calls for a square 12 by 12 at each corner that you can come through with a man or a man on a horse, and that would give the
you have 30 seconds, Senator.
In there, and this bill deals with that. This, I don't pretend it's going to solve all the problems, but this is a first step in solving the very difficult problem we're getting with lack of access to our public lands for hunting. I want to get it in so it can get on the table as we go forward in trying to deal with this problem. I urge your aye vote.
Thank you, Senator. In regard to Senate File 53, the Chief Clerk will please call a roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader? Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson? Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing?
Barnard, aye to no.
Barnard, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing? Vote closed. 13 ayes, 17 noes.
Senate File 53, having failed to receive a two-thirds majority vote, Senate File 53 has failed introduction. Senate File 72, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 72, sponsored by Senator Perkins, foreclosure in probate, an act relating to foreclosure.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Under Senate Rule 24-1, I move Senate File 72, foreclosure and probate, and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, on this bill, what we've got, or what I'm attempting to do in this bill, is address a situation that I've seen a couple times in recent history, and that is we've got a probate. You have someone who passes away. They own a house, which oftentimes is one of the large, is one of the only, or at least one of the, if not the only major asset in a probate. And obviously what happens is that the person has passed away, the mortgage payments aren't being made, and there's been a few instances where the mortgage companies have foreclosed on those houses before they could be dealt with in probate. What this bill attempts to do is address that issue by simply saying that before a foreclosure can happen in a probate, that they must get the court would have to, the judge in the probate case would have to approve the foreclosure. And so, you know, the object would be simply that you ask permission to do that. So if the house is sold, or that you can delay it long enough so that people can realize their value out of these houses before they get sold. I have to admit that most banks and most individuals are more than happy to work with folks and try and allow them to sell it. And so we've only seen this in a couple places, usually with out-of-state mortgage companies that are doing these types of things. But nevertheless, trying to give some opportunity and some protection to folks so that they can realize the value of their assets out of a probate and not have them evaporate through a power of sale that's exercised on courthouse steps. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Senate File 72, Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geist.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 72. Having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 77, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 77, sponsored by Senator Case, Expenditure of Public Funds and Government Competition, an act relating to the administration of government.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move for the introduction of Senate File 77, Expenditure of Public Funds and Government Competition. Mr. President, I'm sure you recall that a couple years ago we established there was a bill about government transparency that established a website whereby expenditures in government are reported to the people of Wyoming, and you can go to this website. And I think you also recall that I've been trying to figure out a way to allow our citizens of Wyoming to tell us what their concerns are about government competition with the private sector. And my issue there, really, Mr. President, has been that we all hear these stories, but there's no centralized collection of that data and reporting. And at different times, I've tried to place this function in the governor's office with varied support. I've also talked to the auditor about maybe the auditor's office taking that function. Finally, I researched that we have, of course, this transparency website, and that this would be a good place, Mr. President, to add just a website portal where people can come in and click on it and address their competition concerns. We can collect that information and make a report, and we can find out down the road whether government competition with the private sector is of concern or not in particular areas. You know, I've tried to simplify this down to the lowest possible denominator, where it's just putting a place on an existing website. Yes, there'd be some expense of developing the website and doing it, but I think I've finally made it so this is really workable, and I have taken the concerns that people have and tried to simplify it. I ask for your support on this fairly simple bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Regard to Senate File 77, Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel. Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer, Scott, Von Platern, President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 77, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senators, I would remind you, by rule, we must be on the floor in order to cast a vote. Senate File 78.
Senate File 78, sponsored by Senator Johnson, Interstate Compact on Students of Military Families and Act Relating to Education.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. President,
According to Senate Rule 24-1, I move introduction of Senate File 78. Usually I don't have bills during budget sessions. I figure between the budget and the committee bills, that's enough. I have two this year. One was introduced yesterday, and this is the second one. Both of them failed last year in the general session for the same reason. I asked for them to go down because there were too many questions that I didn't feel could be answered quickly during the session and wanted the summer. I know you'll all remember this one because the big question was sovereign immunity. This is an interstate compact. It'll be the same in all of the states. Right now, 45 states have passed this compact, and it has to do with education and the students of the military, our military, as their parents get transferred around the country and how they're treated by the states and the school districts. Well, this summer, the following groups worked on this bill. Attorney General's Office, Governor's Office, LSO staff, Council of State Governments, and the Department of Defense. And I've been told, especially by LSO and the Governor's Office, that all of the questions, all of the worries, and all of the problems have been answered to their satisfaction. I won't go through them because I'm hoping you'll introduce this. It'll be successful in the committee, and then when it comes to the floor on general file, I can go into the specifics. But it's a vital enough question that 45 states have passed this interstate compact, and I'd sure like to be number 46.
Thanks, Senator. In regard to Senate File 78, Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case. Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geist,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson, Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 78, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 76, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 76, sponsored by Senator Hicks, Water Beneficial Use, an Act Relating to Water.
Go ahead, Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, pursuant to Senate Rule 24-1, I would move for introduction Senate File 76, Beneficial Use of Water. What this does is it adds one sentence to the current statute, and I would refer you to the bill, and that sentence is: the legislature hereby retains authority for changes to the determination of what constitutes beneficial use of water in Wyoming. The next section that's in here is an enumerated section that I obtained from the state engineer's office that limits or demonstrates what currently all the water rights in the state of Wyoming have been issued to indicate beneficial use. And let me explain the context of beneficial use. Under Wyoming state water law, beneficial use shall be the basis, the measure, and the limit of all rights to use water in the state of Wyoming. It is the foundation upon what our water law has been on. Beneficial use is predicated on the assumption that if you can't use it, you can't speculate on it. You have to put that water to use, and that's the foundation of our state water law. When the state of Wyoming had an abundant supply of water and unlimited in our early days, the current system we had served us well. But today, in constrained water supplies, new technologies advancing, changes probably need to occur. Let me describe the current situation as today. This bill is really about governance. Currently, the bureaucracy within state government determines any changes to beneficial use. You could wake up tomorrow and the people of the state of Wyoming would never know that there wasn't a new use of water out there, and it's the government that decided, not the legislative process, not you as the elected officials, not the representative democracy that we have in this country. There's no procedures to go through APA, there's no rulemaking, or no other procedure for public input, legislative oversight, and how beneficial use is determined in the state of Wyoming. While that system worked in the past, it's probably not the best system in the future, given the fact that we have limited constraints on water. I believe the people in the state of Wyoming deserve an opportunity through their representatives, the legislative process, the committee hearings we have, that if we move forward, and I'll tell you one of the ones that's going to be debated in the near future, is carbon
30 seconds.
Is carbon sequestration a beneficial use of water? Most of us would probably say yeah, if it's an economic benefit to the state of Wyoming. But that probably should be debated, and it should be discussed by the legislature to represent the people that elected us to make these decisions. Thank you.
Thank you.
I ask for your favorable consideration.
Senate File 76, Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
No.
Case. Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins. Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
no.
Von Flatern, President Anderson,
aye.
Closing vote,
Nicholas,
aye to no. Closing, Hines, aye to no. Closing, vote closed. 24 ayes, 6 noes.
Senate File 76, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 73, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 73, sponsored by Senator Esquibel, Termination of Parental Rights, an act relating to termination of parental rights.
Go ahead, Senator Esquibel.
Thank you, Mr. President. Pursuant to Rule 24-1, move Senate File 73, Termination of Parental Rights. And you all should have a handout of my presentation on your desk. As it stands today, the federal and state laws mandate Department of Family Services, and they're the ones that approached me in terms of bringing this to your attention, mandates the Department of Family Services and the system to provide reasonable efforts for reunification to parents for 15 out of 22 months if their children have been taken into protective custody. Family Services is required to provide services to reunify families until a court finds that Family Services has provided reasonable efforts to the family and order termination of parental rights. There are provisions to terminate parental rights after 15 of 22 months, but this bill allows an option to pursue termination prior to 15 of 22 months. This bill is in addition to Wyoming Statutes 14-2-309. This creates additional circumstances when reasonable efforts to reunify a child with their parent is not required in a juvenile court case. This bill would allow the courts to expedite termination of parental rights in those cases when a parent who has been convicted of sexual abuse against a child or the parent is a registered sex offender. I might add, Mr. President, that currently Department of Family Services has 789 children in custody for abuse and neglect in this state. Of those children, 240 have been in Department of Family Services custody for over 2 years. Last year, Department of Family Services had 81 substantiated cases of sexual abuse. This bill allows the the system, the courts, and family services to expedite a permanency plan for the children or youth that are affected without providing reasonable efforts and services to reunify the family. This provision will allow for a quicker transition for children and youth to be in a permanent home. This bill is an option for the court to order termination of parental rights of a parent only if the court deems it appropriate on a case-by-case basis. This bill does not make it mandatory. Thank you, Mr. President. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator. Senate File 73, Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstetter. Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Ross.
No.
Rothfuss. Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
no.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson,
aye.
Closing vote. Closing.
Christensen,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 25 ayes, 5 noes.
Senate File 73. Having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 71, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 71, sponsored by Senator Christensen. Aquatic Invasive Species, an act relating to aquatic invasive species.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, pursuant to Senate Rule 24-1, I move for introduction of Senate File 71 and request your favorable consideration. Members of the Senate, today we have a bill in front of us that is focused on protecting our state's waters and enhancing an effort that's already been going on. For the last couple of years, we've been working on check stations. What we found out is, to the best of our knowledge, we do not have the zebra or quagga mussels. These are dangerous aquatic invasive species. This bill would move that effort. It would change that law to our state boundaries. What the law says is this bill requires mandatory inspections of conveyances entering our state. It provides for locations and appropriation and an effective date. It says every conveyance entering our state shall be inspected before it enters our state waters. Incredibly critical to protecting these waters. It also provides for a relationship and cooperation with YDOT. I'd ask for your support of this bill, and I'll let you know right now that we have an amendment that goes to the appropriations and the agencies working together on that. We've got the opportunity, and I'll briefly touch on that amendment if it's appropriate, but it addresses the finances, and it also radically increases the number of agencies that are working together. There's some real partnership and cooperation on this. Wyoming is a headwater state, and we're not going to get these aquatic invasive species unless they're hauled in on us. And so we really need to protect it, not only to protect our towns and counties that use surface water, our ag producers, and or our fisheries. It'll affect all aspects of this state. So I think this is a very important bill. It's an extension of work that's already being done, and it takes us in the right direction. Ladies and gentlemen, to emphasize the point here. We talk about how we walk with our feet, and I'd like to encourage you to take these Western boots that most of you are wearing and go ahead and stomp on those aquatic invasive species with a yay vote. So, step up to it. Give us that yay vote we need to pass this one forward. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Senate File 71, Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Yay.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 71, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is being referred to Committee Number 6, TRW. Senator Christian, just a bit of counsel regarding the use of props on the Senate floor. I'd urge you to be careful. They may be kicked out from under you. But given the outcome of the vote, I'll say you're well equipped to kick this issue on down the road. Senate File 68, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 68, sponsored by Senator Landon, time limits for veterans and dependent tuition and fees, an act relating to veterans' educational benefits.
Senator Landon.
I guess it makes it a little bit of a difficult show to follow, but in accordance with Senate Rule 24-1, I would move introduction of Senate File 68 and ask for your favorable consideration. Fellow senators, I bring this bill in light of a couple of real-life circumstances that I ran into up in the center part of the state. Senate File 68 goes into Chapter 14 of our statutes and amends 106, which currently defines an overseas combat veteran as a person other than a Vietnam veteran, and further provides for tuition benefit to attend college. These Iraq and Afghanistan veterans must, however, access those benefits for tuition within 10 years of completion of service. Senate File 68 changes that provision and takes off the time limit and simply puts these veterans on the same footing with our Vietnam veterans. Surviving spouses also qualify under this bill, and the dependent qualifications are left the same. Senators, we have veterans from the first Gulf War and even the start of the Afghanistan conflict that are at or past that time, that 10-year time limit right now. The start of the Iraqi campaign was in 2003, so we will be coming up on the time limit for those veterans as well. There are some options for our veterans to access, but they're all fairly limited. These veterans do not qualify for any GI Bill due to the fact that the original Montgomery GI Bill had a 10-year delimiting date. Quite often, these qualifying veterans that we're talking about or their surviving spouse may not think to use or have the ability to use the education benefit that this chamber has voted to provide. They're busy picking up the pieces when they get back from over there. They're raising their kids. They're trying to find a new normal. And chances are they're adjusting to less income. Many of these veterans who have been medically discharged and their surviving spouses are just now beginning to have the opportunity to access these benefits. When they get ready to improve their lives through education, let's be there to help them out. I think this is a good little bill. There is a footnote that I would call your attention to. It's very common, in my
Senator.
Opinion. So thank you for your consideration of Senate File 68.
Thank you. Senate File 68, Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll. Amrick,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 68, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate File 74, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 74, sponsored by Senator Hastert, Severance Tax Trona Valuation, and Act Relating to Severance Taxes.
Go ahead, Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, pursuant to with Senate Rule 24-1, I move for introduction, Senate File 74, and ask for your favorable consideration. Members of the Senate, just in having meetings with the Trona companies before I left, it was discussed that in the oil and gas statutes, they have a provision allowing them to negotiate with the Department of Revenue for severance valuation. And seeing how Trona's in its own section, and they didn't have that ability, all we did with this is roll that in. It's basically the same language that oil and gas has into the Trona section, just allowing them to negotiate with the Department of Revenue for evaluation. And I ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator. Senate File 74, Chief Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
Senate File 74, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports from standing committees.
February the 15th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural State, Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 19, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 15th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 22, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Christensen, Esquivel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 15th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 23, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Esquivel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. Okay. February the 15th, 2012. This is a reread. Mr. President, your committee number 5, State Agriculture, State, and Public Lands, Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 19, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 15th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 26, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for considerations of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Perkins, would you please approach the desk?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 3. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
To the Secretary of State. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, and Martin. Excuse, Senator Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Further reading of the bill, what is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 3, Secretary of State Authority. And for further explanation of the bill, I yield to Senator Hines.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 3 is a further work in the area we've done in the last year or two to help prevent fraud in the state of Wyoming. What this bill will do is authorize the Secretary of State to refuse to accept documents or filing. It also authorizes the Secretary of State to issue cease and desist order to provide notice and appeal, also several things in administrative forfeiture of authorities of limited liability companies. What it will do then, when they have reason that there is intentionally or willfully documents that may be filed, that they can refuse these. And this basically have to come from someone or corporation that have done it before that they've had problems with. It also gives them the authority then to issue cease and desist order if a new person files a document that they find out in the future that it is fraudulent, either intentionally or willfully, then they can issue a cease and desist order and stop that. We've had a case or two already in Wyoming where a corporation or an individual have been a victim of this, a person that they did find out after the fact that had gone in and filed documents and made changes, and it was caught before the person lost any of the business or the income. What they do, they file these documents and then apply for credit, a line of credit. And I believe after that point is where the big problems come in, that the line of credit have been ordered, possibly have already been spent before the person knows it. If this does happen, it's a crime that is reported to the FBI, and the Secret Service is identified to then go work on the case. This is an area that we haven't had a lot of problems to date, but it is becoming routine in some states. The Secretary of State's office have a system where
when one person files these reports and is caught in one state, well, then they can identify it to other states. So if someone comes in that is not known in Wyoming and want to file a document, they have this one opportunity that they can check to see if this person has filed any fraudulent documents in other states. They can then, if they've already filed a document, they have the authority with this bill to issue a cease and desist order and stop that procedure. Within the bill, there is also a section, I believe it is on page 4, starting on line 8, and it gives them the authority if any limited liability company is without an registered agent, then they can order, for that, whatever the reason that they may not have a registered agent, whether they quit or something else was the reason, well, then they cannot continue to operate without a registered agent. And they are notified, and they have 60 days then to take care of that matter. The repeal section on page 5, section 3, has to do with Foreign Limited Partnership Act. And currently and in the past, a partnership could appoint the Secretary of State to act on behalf of that corporation. And it seemed like no one knew exactly when this happened, but we assume maybe in the old days when there wasn't any filings or anything, the corporation, the Secretary of State, done this as a benefit. This is being repealed where the Secretary of State can no longer act on behalf of a corporation. This is something that I think is very important that we give this authority to. It limits it, for the documents that can't be filed. They have to be intentionally or willfully a fraudulent document. If there's any false statements in documents, well, then they have the authority to order a cease and desist. If there are questions on this, I'll try to answer them. If not, I ask for your support.
Thanks, Senator Hines. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, first of all, let me say that I do support this attempt. I think it's important to move forward on this. But I do have some questions and wanted to make sure that a company that's trying to do everything right isn't swept into this for some reason. I'm going over to page 4 and looking at the language there. And I guess really about the first lines 11 through probably 19, a couple of things. One, a registered office. I'm wondering whether or not a post office box would be a registered office or not, whether that's applicable or not. Wondering if you had a limited liability corporation that is this language just to limited liability corporations outside of the state that are outside of the state, or do they apply to limited liability corporations within the state? And if they apply within the state, I've had some follow-up questions.
Thanks, Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I do not have that information on the address, but it's my feeling from what we've discussed on this bill in other areas that you can't just have a out-of-state post office box. But I will check on that and report back on a second reading.
Thank you, Senator Hines. Senator Meyer.
So I'm just wondering to be clear that section 1729705, whether that applies to both limited liability companies within and without the state. I mean, inside and outside the state. If it does, the question I'd have is that what happens if you just have a post office box and that isn't, I guess, enough to establish a registered office that's not actually a physical address. I'm not sure what establishes a registered office. If it's just a post office box and that doesn't do it, then you elect as a limited liability company to have a registered agent. And that registered agent, for whatever reason, ceases to be in business, passes away, or whatever. Then I'm just wondering if what goes on with all of the business that you transacted because you didn't have authority to do with it to do that business. And if you got a bank loan and you didn't have the authority to do it, and your agent wasn't able to represent you and you didn't know it. And what happens to the signature on your bank loan, and can the bank rely on that? There's just some things in there. I'm just kind of wanted to get some clarification.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Senator Case to the rescue.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I can fully rescue, but the next bill actually deals precisely with the issue of registered agents and what happens when they cease to represent their companies. And I think that will clear up a lot of these questions that the good senator has. The issue about the office, that's old language. I frankly, off the top of my head, think that it is possible to receive your mail at a post office box in Wyoming. This does not apply to companies that are registered elsewhere that may do some business in Wyoming. They don't have to register here. So I hope that helps, but I do think the next bill will clear up what a registered agent is and all those things. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman. And I too support this bill. Just a question: this bill is effective immediately. And my question is: if there's some of these folks out there, and they want to get in compliance with this, will they have the time to do it, or do we need to give them a little more time? The normal is that a law is effective on June 30th or something. This thing would kick in somewhere around the 20th of April. If somebody wants to get legal, are we giving them enough time to get legal before this thing kicks in?
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand the law, currently you are required to have a registered agent. And if you don't have a registered agent, when this bill goes into effect, the law will say that the Secretary of State shall, by certified mail, mail you a notice that you are not in compliance and you have 60 days to comply. And it's sent by certified mail.
Okay, thank you. Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, I guess I expressed some of the concerns that have been discussed, but let me give you an example of the concerns that you would have is that unfortunately, I lost a partner to a heart attack about 3 or 4 years ago, and he was a registered agent for not less than 10 or 15 of his clients. And I can tell you that you go out, you begin to search where all the clients are. Sometimes it's hard to find them immediately, or you miss them. Are you telling me because you happen to, or you could say your registered agent is your the father of your company and or one of the owners, and they pass away. I can tell you about half the time I pull up, my clients come in, I pull up their registered agents, and they forgot who it was. It could have been Uncle Joe, it could have been Uncle Harry, or whatever it is, and it might even be the uncle that passed away, and you might go 6 months to a year before you even figure it out. You have no occasion to look at it. So now some event takes place, you get caught in a car wreck, or one of your employees driving one of those vehicles, and they come in and find out the first thing the lawyer does is go search for your registered agent. They find out that, your registered agent is not registered any longer, or he's not living. So are you telling me that during that period you no longer are deemed to be transacting business with authority? And your franchise, your charter was eliminated 9 months ago, and you had no idea. It's a dangerous road.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, just once again, there's a deal. The next bill actually specifically deals with registered agents and says what happens when you no longer are the registered agent, and there's a tiered approach, and it's fully discussed in the next bill, and it's on point. This sort of conforms this to the next bill, and it might be a more efficient use of time to focus the registered agents' questions on the next bill. Now, that's not a duck, Mr. Chairman, but I do think that it'll become clearer, and we'll have this exact same discussion on the next bill.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, you register your business, your LLC, for a year, and that comes due on November 30th. And so your LLC, as I understand it, would be all legal business and everything if after November 30th you was not re-registered. Then they'd send you a notice for 60 days, so you would be okay until the end of November, and then they would be a notice to the owners. And I might also note that I've already found the information on one other question that I had, that you cannot use a P.O. box number as a regional office. It must be a physical address, like voting, that you can no longer use a box number. You have to have a physical address where the business is conducted.
Thank you, Senator Hines. Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Oh, Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, it may already be answered, and it may be answered in the next section, as we've talked about, but it looks like there's a fairly significant change from the company having to take an action to now an absence or a vacuum creates an automatic ending of it. And I want to know if that's the intent of it, that we're changing it from I have to take an action to, as has been mentioned earlier, we have a lack of action or an absence or an oversight that creates then the automatic beginning of the end of the program.
Okay, thank you, Senator Christensen. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think that it does pertain to this bill. If you look on page 4, line 11, it says, if any limited liability company is without a registered agent, without a registered agent could mean someone passes away, it shall be deemed to be tracked to acting business in the state without authority. So I think that's a legitimate concern brought up by my colleague from Albany County. And I understand that the next bill deals with registered agents specifically, but this, if you're without a registered agent, you shall lose that authority to transact business.
Senator Case.
I'm getting double-teamed here. I'm getting officially tagged on the floor, and I'm getting side-tagged right here.
You can't overcome strategy.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we'll get a better answer for everybody tomorrow. I definitely see the point. Point's well made.
Okay, thank you, Senator Case. For the discussion, are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion Senator's motion when the committee of the whole rights report to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 3, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 3 is passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 4. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File Number 4, sponsored by the Corporation Committee, Registered Agent, Commercial Agent Registration, an act relating to registered agents. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, and Martin, excuse Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Thank you. We've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Case, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 4, Registered Agents, Commercial Agent Registration.
a lot of stuff about registration commercial agents, and it's way beyond my pay grade, but it's perfectly in line with Senator Martin's pay grade, and I yield to him.
Okay, we'll go to Senator Martin. Senator Martin, who makes apparently has a higher pay grade than Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, but I didn't realize that we got paid for this. So, Mr. Chairman, this is also a continuation of the work that we've done in the last year with the Secretary of State's office in regard to the fraud-friendly problems that we were dealing with. Senate File 4 relates to registered agents and provides for resignation of commercial registered agents and continued responsibility of a resigned commercial registered agent, timeline for renewal and, of those agents, and a tiered late fee for renewal. What the Secretary of State's office is seeing is a trend of registered agents using the renewal process as a means of dumping businesses that they no longer want to represent at a cost to Wyoming. And that cost is the administrative time that it takes to send out notifications, certified notifications, over a period of time. And at this point in time, there's no means to recoup those dollars. But under this legislation, it would enhance the penalty for those people who intentionally fail to renew so that they can get rid of their dead wood. If you go to the bill, page 1, line 14 through page 2, line 11, the resignation of a registered agent under 1728103 is failure of a commercial registered agent to renew their registration will create a resignation of the agent for the purpose of administrative suspension or forfeit of the entities represented. Under this legislation, the registered agent will remain responsible for all the requirements to each entity represented, and that will not fall back on the state. Until a new registered agent is appointed or until the entity is administratively dissolved, revoked, or its authority to transact business is forfeited. Page 2, line 13 through page 4, line 7 is the registration requirements. And every applicant for registration will pay a filing fee, which is $25. And this filing fee is designed to recover the cost of administrating the requirements related to the registered agent. If an application is withdrawn or denied, the Secretary of State will keep the entire fee. That fee, as it stated, is used to cover the administrative costs. Registration of a commercial registered agent will be valid for one calendar year of registration and will expire December 31st, will be subject to the following. Renewal of registration will be made by paying the annual fee by November 30th of each calendar year. Any person acting as a commercial registered agent who renews between December 1 and December 31st will be required to pay an additional late fee equal to the annual fee. So they would pay their annual fee of $25. They're a month late, so they pay another $25. The late fee goes to the general fund. It does not stay with the Secretary of State's office. Any person who acts as a commercial registered agent after the expiration of December 31st and willfully or by neglect fails to renew the registration will be acting in violation. Registration after December 31st will require a late fee of $500. Plus an administrative fee that is considered reasonable costs incurred by the Secretary of State for notification of the entities represented by the commercial registered agent and classified as delinquent, awaiting administrative termination, overturning, or penalty. And all fees will be required to be paid in full prior to any re-registration as a commercial registered agent. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. I think that one question I think that the good senator from Laramie had in concern to a partner who passed away, I don't know that this truly deals with that. We're talking about an agent. If that agent didn't renew because he passed away, what this is saying is that that agent, even though he's not alive, would still be responsible for those entities until that is taken care of. You know, I don't know that that answers that question for the good senator.
Thank you, Senator Martin. It's nice to know that you can still be responsible even after you're dead. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, the an earlier bill, and I know we're not supposed to refer to it, but since it was brought up, does not address simply commercial registered agents. It deals with all registered agents. Now, when we come to the commercial registered agencies, I think we have to be careful what we're doing here. If you take a look at page 2, my question to the sponsors are that I'd like to have an answer is, and that's the following. First of all, there are commercial agent or commercial folks out there that make a living do this. But most of you in here, if you have an attorney that in my law firm, we charge nothing to be a commercial agent to an agent for our clients. We do it as a matter of courtesy because really all the registered agent was designed to do in the beginning was to accept filings of litigation. So if we have rancher clients or we have commercial or mom-pop businesses, the question we always ask them, if the sheriff comes and sues you because you got a debate, would you rather have the sheriff come to our offices or would you rather have him come to the ranch or would you rather have him come into your business? And a lot of clients say, you know, we'd prefer, we hope we never get sued, but if we do, we kind of like the sheriff to go to your office instead of ours. And that's all we did. And then it turns out that if you do that, you have more than 10 clients or so, I've forgotten the number, but say 10 clients, now you're a commercial registered agent. And that's fine. I mean, it really doesn't make any difference because the courtesy that I offered the client was simply, if you get sued, they come and they provide the complaint to me. Now what we did in trying to solve problems for the state of Wyoming, the state of Wyoming says, well, we want the registered agents now to take on new responsibilities. You need to know who the corporation is. You need to know who their board of directors are. You need to know all these other things that were never part of what a registered agent is. So now, because there's some fraud out there, the Secretary of State wants to shift their job to registered agents. And that's, frankly, for the average lawyer out there is not a problem because most of these companies are your clients. You know who they are, and you know how to get a hold of them. But my question is this, is on line 7 through 9, on page 10, 2, and the new language, if the proposition is that these registered agents are not only there to be to receive summons, I mean, it's always been the case that if you're the last registered agent, even if you stop being the registered agent until there's a new registered agent, I get to serve my complaint on you. Because I've got to serve a complaint if there's a suit. Fair enough, for the purpose of receiving a complaint until a new registered agent is registered, you ought to be able to sue and serve the person that's on the website. My question is, you're saying, okay, you can't resign. Well, if you're resigning, if you're a commercial entity and you're resigning because the company will not afford you and give you that information about who the president is, who the shareholders are, now you're saying you're responsible for having all that information even though you've resigned. Well, the reason you resigned is because they won't provide you that information, and now you're saying you can't resign or you're charged with having that information. So if you just think about that and let us know tomorrow whether or not we've created an impossibility, that is, the reason why you want to resign is because there's a company that's either disappeared or, you know, I've done it for folks that have come in state, they left the state, and when people leave the state, their companies dissolve, and frankly, they don't leave a return address, they just left. And at some point, you have to resign from it. I don't mind receiving complaints because I can send it to the last known address. But if you're going to charge me with having notice of those, frankly, I don't even know who those companies are. I have a couple people that
left the state and don't know where they went, don't know what they're doing. They lived in Laramie for about a year. So what's the purpose there? With respect to the annual filing fee, once again, you want to do it during December, and now you get a $500 fine. Well, if you're a lawyer out there and you're doing this as a courtesy, it's kind of like you all receiving, when you writing your annual form for registering for your conflicts issue every January. And remember what happened? We had these fines, and people were missing the dates. From December 1 to December 30th, first, you know, I'm kind of like the rest of you. Actually, I know where I'm at during that time. It's down the hall. And oftentimes, you know, I forget to file it, and then they call me, and you file it on January 1. So it's a $500 fine. What's the purpose in it? Now, I think if you're talking about firms that do it for a charge, maybe something. But this picks up the lawyer down the street. If you happen to have 10 companies and you're a registered agent, it's the same thing for you. It's pretty onerous to have a fine for simply forgetting to file it on December 31 and you file it the next day.
Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think we have to realize kind of one thing to start off. We have to realize that times have changed a bit. And not everybody that seeks to do business in Wyoming is necessarily even here in Wyoming. Our corporate development opportunities are available literally worldwide, Mr. Chairman, and sometimes that's a problem. And there are bad actors out there that seek out, and I think you remember when we first started tightening up some of these rules, there were websites available that said, incorporate in Wyoming because they don't require any actual data on who's behind the corporation, da-da-da-da-da-da. And we got a bad reputation for that. We still have a bad reputation in another area. If you recall, there was a news expose a few months ago that said, showed a house in the city of Laramie that had that was the address for I believe, more than hundreds. I think it was thousands of corporations. And the House, no, Mr. Chairman, so there is a problem in trying to make sure that a corporation trying to seek and use our laws to do business and use the reputation of Wyoming has a face and name with it. Now, this deals with the situation where you have, you know, we now require them to have a registered agent. The trouble is, it's kind of, you know, we're not always talking about the good lawyer down the street who's doing this as a favor to their clients, that are the mom and pa's in Wyoming. There are actually people that have hundreds or more corporations that they are the registered agent for. Now, in some cases, the registered agents actually cease doing this. They, in essence, dump all their corporations. It happens a lot, especially for these mail order, website-based corporate involvements. So it is a I concede absolutely it is difficult to balance, you know, the corporations we know in Wyoming that are from our hometowns and nearby ranches with this whole gigantic world of corporations. That's why the corporate statute deals with, the commercial registered agent deals with 10 or more corporations. We could have chose 20 or more, but it was 10 or more, and that's existing law. And what this is really trying to say, that you can't just dump your corporation and then we don't have a contact for them. And it says that if you are a registered agent, you have to find a way to tidily wind it up. If you don't want to represent that corporation anymore, you've got to contact them, get them to put another registered agent. You can't just dump them. And it does happen a lot, and it's a major concern in the Secretary of State's office. So, you know, you at least have the responsibility of assuring that the corporation, and there is a way to dump them. There's a way to provide them with notice and to say, you have this much time. But you can't do it by just not filing the fees and disappearing from being the registered agent. So there is an orderly process by which you can have your corporations that are in your charge go to someone else, and you can notify them, and it's a 60-day process, and they have to find a new agent. You can do that, and that's not in this statute, but it's part of this law, or it's not in this bill.
We have to have an ability to attach a face to a corporation. When we lose that ability, that's where we get in trouble. And, you know, if the fees for reinstatement of a commercial registered agent are too much, if that $500 or those dates, those are all changeable. You know, but this is for a commercial registered agent's registration, somebody that has a lot of corporations. So, and it may be a minimum of 10, it may be Wyoming 10, but it may be worldwide thousands. And so you got to put the $500 fee in perspective. You can change that, and you can have it come in at a later date if you want to. But we do need to keep a face on these corporations, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case, thank you. So we'll go to Senator Jennings and then back to Senator Nicholas after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a short question. What's the difference between a late renewal fee and a fine? And if it really is a fine, why is it going back to the general fund instead of the school fund or possibly the highway fund?
I have no idea. We'll
okay.
Try to find something out.
Thanks for that enlightenment, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'd just ask the committee to, I mean, they've worked this bill hard. It is a committee bill, but I would ask two thoughts. With respect to, on page 2, with respect to the responsibility to consider whether or not it would be, whether or advise us first, if the requirements that they're being responsible continue to be the responsibility to provide names and addresses of corporate officers and directors, I don't know how you can comply with that if there's a non-cooperative entity. I do agree, however, that with respect to the original bill, now going back before those added responsibilities, that until a new registered agent is appointed, the old registered agent should be sufficient for service of process. So if that requirement is simply restricted to service of process, I think that's appropriate. But to say now that you continue to be responsible to get information that you simply can't get, that seems a little onerous to me. So if you at least consider that. With respect to the annual registration and these penalties on registered agents, commercial agents, what I would ask the committee is to determine whether we can simply solve the problem by distinguishing between corporate registered agents, as you've just described, that is, those firms that are formed for the purposes of doing this, and the non-corporate ones, those are just the occasional lawyer that's out there or representatives. It seems to me that you're right with respect to corporate entities, but with respect to everybody else, maybe we can simply solve the problem.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I'm absolutely delighted to continue that dialogue. I do say in the first instance, Mr. Chairman, when you're being asked to provide the names and addresses of the corporation, you're saying you're our last contact. Give us the names and addresses. And if those aren't available, and if you're a registered agent and you've actually lost contact with your company that you represent, they've disappeared or whatever, it's in your own best interest, Mr. Chairman, to sever your relationship with that company, to provide them, attempt to provide them the notice and to resign, as is possible elsewhere in the statute. So there's a little bit of balance there, and I'm certainly willing to talk to the good senator. The issue of corporate versus non-corporate, that's certainly worth talking about. You get law firms that are in the middle. There are fairly large law firms that their practice by and large isn't to be corporate agents, but they will have, and there's one or two in Cheyenne that will have thousands of corporate, they're the agents for thousands of companies. So where do those ones fit in? That's not their main line of business probably, but they do a lot of corporate work and they pick up a lot of clients, and I mean thousands, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm willing to talk.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on page 2, line 9, the word appointed, I'm not sure if that's the correct word that we need in there. I always thought that you hired your registered agents or you employed them, and normally for a fee-for-service basis that they're necessarily not appointed by you. And
not sure if that's the right verbiage that we need in there or whatever. Then I think we need to be real careful about how much more we put on registered agents from the standpoint of the last time we did this. I know a lot of people got those notices that I'm no longer going to be a registered agent. I know I've got a couple of businesses that I have, and so you had to go out and do it again. And I think you're going to see the same thing. And so the situation is going to be is you're going to get the 60-day pink slip, more or less, from your registered agents, and then in 61 days from the other bill, you're going to be out of business because you have authority, no longer have authority to corporately do any business in the state. You can't transact anything if you no longer have authority as a business. You can't write checks. You can't get bank loans. You can't buy insurance. You're not an entity. You're wiped off the face of the map. So I think we need to be real careful with these two bills.
Thanks, Senator Meyer. For the discussion, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report, to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 4, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 4 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 5. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 5, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. County Commissioners, removal of appointed board members, and act relating to district boards.
Have you heard the reading of the bill? Senator Case, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee of the whole rises to report it. Do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 5, County Commissioners, removal of appointed board members. Mr. Chairman, I know you're getting tired of listening to me, so I'm going to sit down and maybe sit down for the rest of the day. We'll find out. Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Boy, after the first two, I'd rather have had a lunch break. Background on Senate File 5 is that the county commissioners have enumerated statutory powers to appoint Wyoming citizens to county boards and commissions, and if not all of them, a vast majority of them, of course, are unpaid. The statutes are very clear in the process for county commissioners to appoint board and commission members, yet in some of them they're completely silent on removal. And we all know that sometimes either somebody turns up bad or things happen. Several statutes, not all of them, contain language outlining basis for removal of local board members by the county commissioners, but absence of clear statutory direction leads to confusion in the removal process, and often the issue would need to be litigated, taken to court, and let the judge decide. That's in no one's best interest. It's costly, it's time-consuming. The statutes that already have removal provisions are not affected by this bill. So this bill covers board members on the following county-appointed boards: predator management boards, planning commissions, fair boards, solid waste disposal district boards, and county health boards. And the date of the bill is July 1, 2012. If somebody is removed from the board, they can appeal. And if they do want to appeal, then it would go to the Administrative Procedures Act and the local rules of practice, which are kept by the county clerk. They govern how a request for a public hearing is done before the commissioners, and of course, in all areas, at all times, if the person isn't happy with that, they can go to court. So the county commissioners asked this because it's been a problem. And they're elected officials. We've given them the responsibility for the appointments to these boards, and they should have the ability to remove when it's necessary. And I stand ready for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All of these are pretty much the same as they go through, but so I kind of have a question that would apply to most of them. And one is there any notice required to tell the public official that the county commissioners are removing them? And then, two, there's language in all of these that says, unless the trustee requests a public hearing. Is there any place in this bill or in other statutes that says how long they have to request that public hearing? Is it a week? Is it 2 weeks? Is it 30 days, 60 days, 2 years? Just curious.
Would be in the letter that's actually removing them. I would hope that the county commissioners had talked to them or the other board members ahead of time. In the committee, there was suggested a time frame. The association does not recommend inserting a time frame, but if the body feels that there should be a time frame for somebody to come in and appeal the removal, then that's what the amendment process is all about. And I doubt very much if the committee had fallen on our swords about that.
Thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that the letter, I don't see any place here that requires the Board of County Commissioners to send them a letter saying they're being removed. So is there some place that says that they actually have to send them a letter? I agree with the good senator from Laramie County that if there's a requirement to send a letter, that is indeed notice. But I don't see any requirement to send a letter in the first place. A nice courtesy, but...
Again, Mr. Chairman, if the body feels that that should be in this bill, commissioners are directed to do so, that can be done by the amendment process.
Thanks, Senator Johnson. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess I've raised the following questions and asked if the committee investigated this and what the conclusion was in the committee, but here's my general concern. In most instances, a lot of these board members were appointed by the county commissioners in the first instance, and if anything, they should serve at the pleasure of the county commissioners or whatever. Now what you're saying is that with each one of these languages for each instance, you say they could be removed for just cause, and then there's an opportunity for a public hearing without describing what the public hearing is. You mentioned the Administrative Hearings Act, Procedures Act, although I don't see that. Now, as a practical matter, if you take in any employee, whether it be a private employee or but particularly if you take a governmental employee or in this sense, they're not really employees, they're a governmental position, and you say that you can only be removed for just cause, and then you further provide that there's a public hearing, some sort of a due process requirement. If you fail to comply with that, then the employee now can sue you under 1983 actions for depriving you of your statutory rights without a hearing. Now, those 1983 cases are generally defended by the Wyoming Association of Risk Management Group, which has a budget for it, and the more 1983 claims that you create, then the more they have to defend. And, in fact, remember, with the 1983 actions, you can recover $1 of damages. You can also get all your attorney's fees. So while most of these are non-compensatory claims, if you go in and said, well, I was going to get a $16 payment one night, and you've deprived me of 10 meetings, and the total amount was $100, you litigate now in the United States Federal District Court or State Court, you get your, you prevail that there was not just cause to remove you, rather it was a witch hunt or whatever, and you get your $100, and then the lawyer goes in and says, now give me my $100,000 of fees because I just prevailed, I'm the winning prevailing party, and I'm entitled to fees.
So it appears to me that while we want, you may want an opportunity to remove, the issue ought to have been, are they serving at their pleasure, and they can remove them for any reason, and there's no due process, as opposed to saying, well, now, once we put you in that position, you cannot be removed except for due or just cause and for a public hearing. You may have just created, you're trying to create yourself more options, just created more opportunities. It goes back to the issue of, is it an at-will or a contract employee? Folks, if these guys are out there, in most instances, serving at the pleasure of somebody, they ought to be able to be removed without cause and without hearings.
Thank you, Senator Case.
I guess I lied, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, we talked about this in the interim committee, and we actually had proposals for removal at the pleasure, just that the commissioners can remove, and no opportunity for a hearing. Mr. Chairman, the committee went back and forth on this issue a bit, and we decided that there was a bit, and this was the interim committee, that there's a bit of independence that boards have, a small amount on the county commission, that they should not be just new commissioners come in, everybody's fired, all new boards, because the law does establish terms and trustee obligations for these boards. So it's a matter, again, it's a matter of balance. How do you keep from having, allow those boards to kind of exert their own semblance of independence that's granted them under each and every charge where they serve? Or do you want that not to worry about those terms, and you just say anytime the commissioners come in, anytime they want, you can get rid of everybody, put all new in? It's a balancing deal because many times, Mr. Chairman, these boards are trustees of now, they're not employees, Mr. Chairman. These are the, so I would submit that the possibility of 1983 actions doesn't come into play. I could be wrong on that, Mr. Chairman, but certainly the county commissioner's attorney who helped to develop this didn't see that as being a possibility. Mr. Chairman, the issue of cause was, again, to get at, you know, are these boards, do they have some trustee function, and you should just at least have a reason? The county commissioners did not oppose the addition of just cause. They felt that was a fairly easy standard to achieve, and they didn't oppose it. That's not what they originally proposed, though. The idea of a hearing and notice, you know, it just said the county commissioners all have the ability to hold hearings. They do it for innumerable things. I don't know that it's all uniform in all instances, but that's the type of hearing that a county commissioner already has the power to hold with regards to their rules and that they've established. I'm not saying they're uniform across all 23 counties, but it does give somebody, they can at least have their opportunity to have to discuss it in front of the commissioners. I don't see the triggering of a 1983 action, but by golly, that's something that we should pay careful attention to, and I will like to learn more from the good senator about that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas.
Well, I think, maybe I appreciate that explanation. If you look at line 8, for example, on page 2, if the idea is that the employee can simply require that the action be taken during a public meeting, that's a significantly different thing than saying that the employee can, unless the director requests a public hearing. Requesting a public hearing to me means you're going to have an evidentiary hearing, you're going to find out whether there was due cause. That's a significantly different thing than saying the director or who's ever being terminated says, look, by gosh, if you guys want to get rid of me, then man up and do it in a public hearing and at least make your decision in a public hearing. Two very different things. One's a public hearing for a due process type proceeding. that you get to come in, bring all your friends in on the irrigation district, and the other guys can come in and you can fight it out and find out whether it's due cause, or the other simply saying, you know, commissioners, I don't care if you fire me, but by gosh, do it in a public meeting, talk about it, let everybody know why you're doing it, and I can live with it. Two different concepts. We just have to figure out which it is.
For the discussion, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rise report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 5, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 5 is passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 8. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 8, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, Ethanol Tax Credit, an act relating to taxation.
Well, this is the one that Kurt likes. Right,
it was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee of the whole rise and report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 8, the ethanol tax credit. Mr. Chairman, you'll recall when this bill was introduced, I gave you a little bit of history on how we got to this bill and some other bills that are coming. With the shortage or the decline in federal support for our highway department, your interim committee spent the interim looking to gather back up some of the dispersions of highway construction and maintenance funds that have occurred over the years. This is one component of that. What we're doing in this bill is we're ending the state subsidy for the manufacture of ethanol. It's a 40 cents a gallon tax credit. It just happens that I was here in the Senate when we enacted this. We looked at it. There was a bill to put this in. In the early mid-90s, times were extremely difficult in this state. We were in a slump. There was no money in the general fund. If I remember correctly, the year we enacted this, somebody met their demise and had a large estate of about $20 million, and that's what we balanced the state's budget on, was the proceeds from that estate. There was absolutely no money in the state's coffers. It's not true that the Senate put out a list for the following years of other people who were going to contribute to the state's welfare, but we didn't do that. But this bill arose because we were looking to promote economic activity, a worthy cause, absolutely, very worthy, because we had nothing going on. The money to fund this came out of the highway fund, basically the federal highway money. Well, actually, it was the fund itself was the 14-penny tax that we pay, because there was money there. And that's how we funded this program. Over the years, the plant is up and going. I think it's prospered. At least it's still open. Certainly the company has struggled in some other areas, and I'll get into that in a minute. It has provided jobs, somewhere between 15 and 30 jobs. But also over the years, that company has pulled away from highway maintenance and repair a little over $30 million. At the time, it seemed like a good choice. Looking at the situation in front of us right now, and given the time span, what this bill does, it says, now this is a mature industry. This industry also has the benefit of the ethanol federal mandate of the 1585 for when they go to mix that kind of fuel. There are some federal subsidies available. This company chose not to use any of them. I don't even know if they're qualified. I know there is a movement, particularly in our delegates at the U.S. Congress, have said, no, we don't want to support this kind of subsidy for ethanol production anymore. This industry is a mature industry. It's up and rolling. What this bill does is eliminates the state subsidy. I'll walk through the bill, Mr. Chairman, and then I'll try and give you an unbiased view of why I think this is a wonderful bill. What this does, it repeals the gas tax credit provided to producers of ethanol. It also, and this is over at the top of page 2, line 1, it gives this entity until January 1st, 2013. We realize that this company will probably have to change their business plan or get in line for some other sort of assistance. That's fine. We want to give them plenty of time to make that transition. We're trying not to be punitive, if you can say taking a subsidy away is, I don't consider it punitive. They'll walk prouder and they'll walk faster if they're not getting the subsidy. The other thing that I think you have to consider, a couple things. The actual corn that's used in this plant, historically, they're required to have 25% of it come from Wyoming. If you check the figures, they've complied with the 25%. Just. The rest of the corn comes from Nebraska. I've got a lot of friends. Actually, I was born in Nebraska. It's a wonderful state. But I'm not sure we want to be providing assistance to Nebraska corn growers. The second thing that I find concerning with this particular subsidy, this same company got into financial difficulty in Idaho and shifted the debt. Actually, it was the bankruptcy court, I believe, that shifted the debt from their difficulties in Idaho onto this plant. I love my neighbors in Idaho. It's a wonderful state. They grow great potatoes and all those things. But I'm not sure that this company merits a subsidy from the state of Wyoming to help bail out creditors in the state of Idaho. That just doesn't sit right, particularly given the shortage of funds we have for the maintenance and the improvement of our state highways. I'll be happy to try and answer any questions. At the time, it looked like a good deal. But as I said, this is now a mature company, and we've given them time to change their plan on how they operate. It's time to cut them loose and let them walk proud as the only ethanol producer not getting a subsidy in the state of Wyoming. They'll be a better character for it, I assure you.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, it was an interesting history lesson that we heard from the good senator from Johnson County. I'd like to fill in a couple of the blanks. The good representative from Goshen County years ago, Doug Chamberlain, brought this forward, and I think Eli was probably over there the good senator from Riverton was probably over there at that time when that went through. It was later modified when Representative Hageman was the head of the Ag Committee. And Senator Boggs had some concerns about this subsidy going on and on and on and on. And so what we did is that we came up with a compromise on the conference committee, and Senator Boggs brought that forward. And basically what that did was to put a sunset date in the statute. So the subsidy is sunsetted. Make no doubt about it, it does go away. And it will go away. Now, let's look at economic activity as a worthy cause. And I think it was a very worthy cause back when that happened. There is economic activity that's derived by this plant. and not just the 15 to 30 people that are actually in the plant. It basically lifts the whole agricultural market sector value up in Goshen and Platte counties. Those are the two number one and I think number three ag counties in the state. Produce a heck of a lot of corn. I no longer do business with the ethanol company and haven't since the bankruptcy. But I'd like to touch on the bankruptcy a little bit. Sitting in the bankruptcy court over there, I was on the witness stand, and the judge asked me, you know, what's going on in Wyoming? And I said, well, and he asked about the subsidy. And I said, well, this is what's going on. This is the subsidy. I explained it to him. I explained that it is going to go off. It's going to be on for this many years, and this is how much goes back into it. Well, they used that to develop a plan to keep that company alive. And make no doubt about it, the good senator from Johnson County, when I talked to him about it up in the committee room, that's exactly what went on. Not very distasteful to me. I tried to stop it because I didn't feel that it was fair that we had that much debt placed on the Wyoming company vis-a-vis the Idaho company. But, folks, if you've been in a bankruptcy situation, you know the bankruptcy judge can do just about anything they want to. And it's not our duty on this floor to fight the federal bankruptcy codes at this point in juncture. It just isn't. There are some ways that we could look at it, and I think at a later date I'll probably talk to you about that as an interim topic maybe. But that's not what's on the plate now is how we feel about the bankruptcy code. What's on the plate now is whether we're going to keep our word to this industry and our credibility. Now, should we develop an incentive program for the natural gas industry? We're going down that road right now. We got a $15 million project that's going to come in there and subsidize, which I think is a very viable option. To create gasoline from gas. Not much different than gas haul from corn. Two natural products that we have in this state. And we're going to create a factory out of that. It's going to increase the price of natural gas. And we're going to go down the road and it's going to help our budget. The same thing has happened with corn. It's created a factory to produce gas haul. Indeed, there is an ongoing subsidy. I don't expect an ongoing subsidy on the gas thing, but we're trying to grow our economy and keep jobs in the state of Wyoming. Now, is the gas industry going to believe what we put in our statutes? Is the coal industry going to believe what we put in our statutes when we look at coal gasification? Every place that we try to develop economic activity, are the people that are our partners in the future, are they going to be able to trust us? Was GE, they trusted us. Will they trust us the next time we go into a program with them? If we pull the rug out of a $25 to $30 million company and just slip the rug out from underneath them and send that company down the road? Now walk proud and faster. My goodness gracious, you know what it's going to do is basically drive this company out of business. That's $2.8 million that they're going to take out of their bottom line. And it's done. It's history. There's not any giddy up and go and pat you on the back, we'll be fine. That's not going to happen. It's history. You vote for this, basically you pull the rug out from underneath them, you know, and they lock the shop and go away. Now, there's a couple of things that if you are going to do some things like lower the subsidy years, you have to extend it at least another 6 months past that. And the reason for this is that you've got contracts out there on corn, and you're going to get some people caught in a situation where we pulled the rug out from underneath the company, and then they pull the rug out from underneath every cone grower that they contract with. Now I don't want to have that on my conscience. I don't want to have my neighbor say, how come you basically bankrupted me, Kurt? Because you bankrupt this company, then you bankrupt that farmer right down the road when you do it. That's not right. Mr. Chairman, there's a couple other things that we need to look at. Lyman Elevator. That's where a lot of the corn is contracted with. Lyman Elevator is in Nebraska. Lyman Elevator accepts Wyoming corn for storage. They aggregate that Wyoming corn, and they know where it's at, and that's the corn that goes to the Wyoming ethanol plant. Sure, it comes from Nebraska, but when your truck from Wyoming goes across their scale, because Lyman Elevator is right on the border, they put it in a tank, and they disaggregate it from the rest of the corn that's in there, and that's Wyoming corn. It's got a Nebraska address on it, but it's got Wyoming corn in the bins. And so, yeah, I could say there's 75% Nebraska corn if they're counting Lyman, Nebraska corn. There could be even more than that because Lyman, Nebraska's had the contract, that Elevator's had the contract to supply the corn. But it's Wyoming corn. Mr. Chairman, we've touched on a couple of things here. I know there's some other things that I have failed to touch on, but all I can say, folks, is that basically it's a contract in statute. The bankruptcy court relied on it, and it's whether or not we're gonna keep our word when we go into economic development, and it's really up to you guys.
Thank you, Senator Case.
Mr. President, it's been the tradition in the Senate we don't refer to proper names of companies or individuals when we can possibly avoid that. Mr. President, on the issue of do we have a contract here? Mr. Chairman, there is no possible way that a legislature can bind subsequent legislatures. It's not possible. We're all represent our constituents. We all take an oath of office. We all are responsible for the continuity of the green books and the Constitution. And, Mr. President, if those changes need to be made, they need to be made. We can't possibly say that we guarantee that a bill we pass today that we're not going to change in 2, 3, 4, 10 years. We just can't do that. It's not within our power because we are obligated with our oath to look at the circumstances as they come forward, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Chairman, I support the removal of this subsidy. And I support it because the gasohol program is a bad program for America, Mr. Chairman. It's a bad program as we've kind of gone after it. And I've discussed with all of us the issues of when we've kind of done some harebrained economic development schemes. It happens. And, yes, there is another proposed bill. We can discuss that differently. But to make try to say that if we don't approve this one, that has an impact on the other one, I hope it does because I hope everybody realizes when we make these commitments, we cannot obligate or bind future legislatures to the changes that occur. So with that, I hope you will support this bill, Mr. Chairman, and look forward to discussing it further.
Thanks, Senator Case. Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for a little bit of a history lesson from one of the folks who was around when this subsidy first came into existence about what the initial sunset date was. We heard a little bit about a sunset date. That's probably floated over the years. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like a little more explanation about what that original expectation would have been by the corporation in a historical context. If somebody could provide that, I would appreciate it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Rothfuss. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, it's a very good question because I want to talk about it.
Excellent.
Mr. Chairman, when this bill was enacted, there actually was not a sunset date on it. And this issue has come up before. I asked an LSO attorney to research it for me. In fact, this subsidy is not sunsetted. There's a provision in 3917-109 that allows the company, if they wish to, they can bypass any sunset. In order to do that, they need to expand the plant, but if they do so, this subsidy goes on forever. It's one of those quirks in there I don't know if you call that a loophole or a, I think a quirk is a better word. It just happens. But I did have that research. There is no sunset on this. If the company chooses to exercise an expansion, this will go on forever. When this bill originally came to the floor, and I'm happy to get the information that we used, the debate was, is this plant going to be built in Nebraska or Wyoming? And quite frankly, we blinked. Nebraska offered subsidies, but we made sure ours was a little bit better. That's what the debate was. We wanted an industry. We didn't. It was kind of grim, and that's what happened. Sunsets have been. They've tried to put them on since then. There was a plant expansion, and that's actually where the loophole is. It can go on forever. There's no sunset on this, and that's the attorney, not me. Although I try and tell you the truth anyway. In terms of the corn, YDOT does require and does check the trip tickets on where the corn came from. Doesn't matter where it's stored, but they go through those trip tickets annually. And that's how we know what the percentage is, because to qualify for this, the company has to buy 25% in Wyoming. The figure bounces up and down. The lowest was 25.2. Sometimes it gets up to 25.8. But it isn't just the storage facility. I want to give the people credit that they have complied with the law. And when we verify that with the trip tickets. That's really the size of this thing. If anybody's interested in what we looked at in terms of the subsidy in Nebraska and here, I can get that for you. We've got that in the committee room. But it's that Wyoming wanted an industry. But now it's time for the industry to stand on their own. And I believe it's time for this Senate to say the priority in this Senate is to take care of the people of Wyoming, specifically our roads and highways. And that's what we're asking you to do, to bring that money back home and use it to maintain our highways. They are vital to our commerce. And this is an additional, right now the limit is $4 million a year that goes on forever and ever, that will be put back on your highways, and and obviously the cities and counties get their share of that, so you'll see it in your local neighborhoods. And that's what we're saying, priorities is with our roads here in the state of Wyoming. I ask for your support.
Question? Ready for the bill? No, we're not quite ready for the bill. Senator Meyer.
No, we're not, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on the matter of the subsidy, whether it's ongoing or not, if the company had got an increase in the amount of ethanol they produced by over 25%, then that 25% would go on for another 15 years. And that first date was 2009, the last one 2011. The company hasn't done that. There's no other gasohol company or wood chip company that's producing methanol or anything else in the state. So because they haven't hit that 25% increase before the date of 2011, then the subsidy will go off the longest it could go is 2011 plus 15 years, but they haven't gone up to the 10 million total gallons that they possibly could get. So they're around 7.5 and 8 million gallons. They started out at about 1.1 million gallons and went to 3.5 million gallons, and then they bounced up to about 7.5 to not quite 8. And so that's the maximum that in the maximum time period. So that's how it rolls out in subsidy. Now let's talk about our highways and everything else and backfilling our highways. We backfill our highways on this program and have every year since I've been down here. And we do that, at least from since de-earmarking, is that we've been given the Department of Transportation $50 to $100 million or more every year, year in and year out, every biennium. Now, folks, when we did the food tax, what we did is rather than having an explicit backfill on that, we said, okay, we're going to make sure that the cities, towns, and counties have some money. And it's going to be way higher than whatever the food tax redistribution was. And that's what we've done. And basically, we've done the same thing on highways. So the highways haven't been impacted from the standpoint of not being backfilled because we've put extra general fund monies in there every year. And that's just what's happened on the highways. So, you know, you can look at it from the standpoint of whether it's Nebraska corn or Wyoming corn. It's corn from that general geographic area, and it brings up the price of corn in that general geographic area. That underpins the economy and the agriculture. That lets the folks that are buying their agricultural implements continue to make their payments because they can rely on that price of that corn. It makes the price of beans a little bit higher so they can rely on the price of those beans. It competes for the acres that are on the farm so they can have alfalfa and actually get something for their crops. It's underpinning the entire economic area there in agricultural pricing. And so if you take that out, if you take that underpinning out, you're going to lose probably 10 to 15% of the agricultural pricing across that. Now, the ranchers are going to love it because they can buy their feed cheaper. The ranchers will probably love it, you know, but everybody else. And so if you want to make this a rancher-farmer bill, it's a rancher-farmer bill. It's not a sheep-cattle bill, but it could be a rancher-farmer bill, Mr. Chairman. But, folks, we did make that promise in statute. The U.S. Bankruptcy Court relied upon that promise. We can't hold anybody to doing anything we want to the statutes from year to year. I certainly agree with the good senator from Fremont County. But I tell you what we can do, we can keep our integrity. And I tell you what, once you lose your integrity, the rest is easy.
Question. Heard the question. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion, thank you, that when the committee of the whole rise report to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 8, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 8 has passed committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee of the whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You heard the motion. Are there any announcements? Senator Bebeck.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Just a minute.
Mr. President, your committee number 9 minerals will meet in 15 minutes after a recess today.
Okay.
In room S18 to consider Senate Bill 15, advanced conversion technology, and now for the Senate Bill 14, which is your hybrid energy, system related projects, and Senate Bill 12, which is your energy and now for the
Thank you, and I think we better pause so that the motion can be put in place. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, would you like to make the motion for the recess?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, before I make that motion, I did need to make an announcement. Members of the Senate, Kay Warnock, Wyoming's liaison to the National Council of State Legislatures, will be here today and visiting with legislators about NCSL services. Wyoming legislature pays dues to belong to NCSL, and the organization has a wealth of resources available to help you with your legislative work. Ms. Warnock will be in the Senate lobby this afternoon. If you have any questions, be happy to visit with you. Kay also made some cupcakes for us to enjoy, which are available in the Senate room. With that announcement, Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2:15 p.m.
Okay, let's go ahead with the announcements then. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room 302, that's 302, to discuss Senate File 41, Wolf Management, Senate File 42, Natural Resource Large Project Funding, and Senate File 17, Game and Fish Authority Revisions.
Thank you. Other announcements? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room S-19, top of the stairs, to undertake the following efforts. Senate File 6, County Memorial Hospital District Staggered Terms, Senate File 7, Election Districts Revisions, Senate File 62, Electrical Installation, Licensing Exceptions, Senate File 67, Real Estate Brokers and Sales Agents, Opinions of Value.
Other announcements? Looks to be a relatively short afternoon from my view. I think there are two bills left up on the board. With that, you've all heard the motion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. The Senate shall stand at recessed until 2 p.m. this afternoon. 2:15. I'm sorry, I correct that. 2:15 this afternoon.